Hey, so maybe we did need a preseason after all. Pretty much the entire league is on the injury report now. And last week, you know, we said, hey, the play is not sloppy. We thought we were good to go. And every player's body told us pretty much otherwise. Here to give us all their thoughts on the players that did manage to play today and more, we've got Eric Smith, the man in charge. Eric, how you doing tonight?
I'm pretty good. This week, about halfway through, became pretty clear. You don't care anymore about if your team wins or loses. You just want your first and second round draft picks to escape. So I think most of my teams did, but there's a lot less fortunate than mine were. So I hope y'all can survive this week because it was a rough one.
Yeah, RIP to everyone who had the second or third pick in the draft and went for Saquon Barkley. And Mike, how are you doing, man?
I'm doing great. Bears held on for a win against the Giants, so 2-0, and fantasy teams are doing all right. No major injuries hit me. So, yeah, so far, so good.
And that's Mike Miklius, our resident defense streaming expert, what we saw, and also huge Bears fan, obviously. The number one Bears fan, really. Speaking of the What We Saw team, check out our What We Saw article tomorrow. It's going to be on our website, QBList.com. You can also find it and all of our other content on our Twitter page, at the QB List. So let's get right into it. Winners and losers this week. Eric, who's your big winner for week two?
Yeah, I think the winner for me is just the Bills passing game in general. They threw a bunch of passes last week against the Jets. I thought that was kind of a fluke. They're going to settle back into the Bills that we expected, which is a lot of defense, a lot of running the ball. And it was just the opposite. I mean, Josh Allen is just chucking the ball all over the field. He's got a great connection with Stephon Diggs. And Allen topped 400 yards passing, 4 passing touchdowns, and only ran for, it was less than 20 yards. So this is a new Bills passing game, and it's kind of nice to see them take advantage of Diggs since they went out and, you know, gave up a lot for him. So I guess it makes sense, but it's really nice to see Allen, Diggs, Josh Brown, and all of them just blow up this week against the Dolphins, who have a couple really good cornerbacks here.
Eric skirting the rules there by picking a whole team as his winner. Mike, do you have a whole team as the winner too, or did you just pick one player?
I do not. I have just one player. I've got David Montgomery as my winner. The Bears defense looked better today, which means they'll be able to stay in games, you know, because if it gets over 21 points, they start to get in trouble. And he got the carries. He got the touches. He was far and away the top used threat in Chicago. So.
And that was 21 combined points when the Bears started getting in trouble, right? If both teams get above 21 points combined, it's like real dangerous waters.
Yeah, if there's 3 total touchdowns in the game, that's a little high for our liking.
That's David Montgomery is Mike's winner of the week. Eric, who do you have as your loser of the week?
Well, we talk about him every week, but it's Nyheim Hines. I wasn't thinking that he was going to do this all year and just be the lead back and blow up here, but he was really disappeared in the passing game, which was shocking to me. So you got to take a step back after this first and second week and reassess on what Hines is going to be going forward. We'll get to him in the Colts game, but that passing floor was not there. So maybe he's not the safe James White or Tariq Cohen type that we thought. And maybe we just need to put him on the bench for a week. We'll see.
Yeah, Colts got out to a big lead and pretty much were in control the entire game. So Hines was never really a factor, which means, you know, as Eric said, we were hoping for a James White kind of always involved type of pass catching back. But it looks like Hines is really going to be game flow dependent moving forward. Mike, who's your loser of the week?
Well, speaking of the safe Tariq Cohen types, my loser of the week is Tariq Cohen. It's a bad day for pass catching backs in general. Tariq Cohen was the third most used back on the team behind David Montgomery, obviously, but also Cordarrelle Patterson. He only had one target on the day, which is pretty brutal. It's safe to say he's not really usable for the short term. If anything changes there, anybody goes down, maybe. But right now, I'd be pretty terrified to use him.
So a couple of pass catching backs there is loser one and loser two for Eric and Mike. And, you know, that means James White got to feast as the only pass catching back. He didn't play today. So that's pretty much all. If you have a pass catching running back, it's not looking good for you right now.
Yep.
Speaking of players that didn't play today, Saquon Barkley did play, but he probably tore his ACL. At least they fear that that's what it was. This is obviously terrible news for anyone who is kind of on the third year running back. Deion Lewis got the work as Wayne Gallman was inactive today. 10 for 20. Are we picking up Deion Lewis? Are we picking up Wayne Gallman? Do we want anything to do with this Giants running game, Eric?
I can't imagine. I mean, Deion Lewis got an overwhelming snap count once Saquon left. So obviously, if he's going to get like 90% of the snaps, he's going to have use in fantasy leagues. But I think this is the kind of situation where they reassess afterwards. You know, they promote someone from the practice squad, whatever, and they get a committee going here, because no one running back can replace Saquon Barkley, especially not Deion Lewis, who we've seen be pretty mediocre for the last few years. So I don't think there's a lot here. Somebody will be worth picking up just because they're, you know, a quote unquote starter, but I'm not running out to spend any fab on either of these guys.
Mike, you feel the same about Deion Lewis, or do you think maybe there's something more here?
So I would say, I think he's only worth picking up if they don't add anybody. I think we've seen the retreads on the team, the Wayne Gallmans, and there's nothing special there in my opinion. If Lewis can keep the job, I think he's in line for some good pass catching work. I think Jones likes to throw to the running back, and I think he's used to it with Barkley. And Lewis obviously isn't the threat that Barkley is, but if he can pull down 4 or 5 catches a game, then that's plenty for me.
And actually, it's interesting you bring up if they don't add anyone, because Devontae Freeman's still out there. New York might be a natural place for Freeman to go. You know, very easy role for him to step into, kind of just trying to take over that Saquon Barkley role that, you know, I mean, he's done before in Atlanta many years ago now, but, you know, we all still think Freeman might still have something left in the tank. Also in the Giants game, Sterling Shepard went down with a toe injury. He tried to come back, so there's probably a decent chance he plays next week, but he went back to the locker room after one play and just, you know, wasn't ready to be out there. Christian McCaffrey is getting an MRI on his ankle. Hopefully it's nothing too serious. He did have a disappointing game by his standards against Tampa Bay, because he was still actually one of the top running backs of the day for all, you know, running backs. But again, you know, by his standards, not too great against Tampa Bay. And along with subpar performances, Julio Jones, Devontae Adams, both hampered with a hamstring, having tough days, you know. So, you know, all these players, all these studs that are, you know, kind of looking questionable between McCaffrey, Adams, and Jones, who are you feeling the best about moving forward, Eric?
I mean, I think, well, it's hard to tell with Adams. We don't have any information. So they may have pulled him because they were winning by a lot. McCaffrey, I mean, if he's a tough player, he's in great shape. I think he'll probably be out there as long as this isn't anything serious. And Julio played most of the game, so I'm not really that worried about any of them as long as tests don't come back tomorrow. I think they're veterans that'll play through this, but you never like to see your first or second round pick with a hamstring injury week two, so it's just kind of holding your breath here for a week or two.
Yeah, Julio might single-handedly send me to the guillotine in the guillotine league, as I was definitely counting on him there. And then in the 49ers-Jets game, seems like everyone went down. Jimmy Garoppolo suffered a high ankle sprain, going to miss a few weeks. Raheem Mostert came out of the game with an apparent knee injury. It may have also been, you know, hey, it was garbage time and we didn't need to use Mostert, and so they let McKinnon, you know, and Coleman get more touches. Mike, are you concerned about any of the 49ers pass catchers, and what are you doing about their backfield?
So I don't think too many of the 49ers pass catchers were useful with Kittle already injured and Deebo Samuel out. I think this kind of puts another nail in the coffin of that Niners passing game. And I don't think it's going to help the running game, because at least there was some threat with Jimmy G back there. And the more weapons you kind of take away, the more people are going to say, all right, it's just the running game. We just have to load up and put everything we can against them. And then the next guy up looks like Jerick McKinnon, who has not exactly been the picture of health. So yeah. I'm ready for that next injury to happen, unfortunately.
Yeah, and they seem to not think Mostert was like an ACL or anything. It might be a knee sprain. And I think Tevin Coleman was actually in and out of the lineup too. So we may be down on this depth chart for the 49ers, but I think whoever's healthy is going to be worth a pickup, at least just to stash on your bench and see what happens.
It feels a little early, but are we already in Jeff Wilson time for San Francisco?
We may be. Maybe I think Hasty's still on the practice squad, undrafted rookie a lot of people liked. So keep an eye on this situation for sure.
Yeah, if you're in need of a running back, I'm definitely agree. I agree with Eric. Hasty could be interesting. Some of those names that were buried because they had so many more established names ready to go. It's not crazy to think someone could break through and be like, oh my God, can you believe we all slept on Hasty and now he's winning people leagues.
And speaking of teams that had pretty much their whole team drop today, Drew Lock went down with a shoulder injury. It's going to be 2 to 6 weeks with a sprained AC joint. And then also Cortland Sutton left in the third quarter. Could be a knee injury, might have just been cramping. So where are we at? I mean, obviously, that's, you know, Sutton was probably the only real interesting Broncos receiver. Well, until Noah Fant today, you know, really had the game that he had. So are we concerned at all about anyone in Denver with Jeff Driskel under center?
Yeah, I mean, he's he'll get you some yards with his legs as far as QB streaming if you're super desperate in like a 2-quarterback league, but he's going to hurt this offense. A lot of mouths to feed. We never want people to get hurt, but at least Lindsey is not there, so Melvin Gordon has the backfield to himself. So Melvin Gordon might be okay. He caught a nice touchdown, but this passing game is going to be a mess now. You're not going to be sure about Sutton's health. Judy should get some decent volume, I think, but it's just how good is that volume going to be?
And then Paris Campbell, Cam Akers, both looking like they might miss some time moving forward. We don't really know yet what's going to happen on that. Tyrod Taylor was scratched before kickoff with a chest injury, which led to a glorious amount of my Twitter, you know, people I follow on Twitter, a lot of Chargers fans that I know, all, you know, proclaiming Justin Herbert as the, you know, the, I don't know, their savior. I don't know. They're very excited about Justin Herbert. And then Darrell Williams also left with an ankle injury, which means it was Darwin Thompson time in LA for the Chiefs. But yeah, I don't think we're really too concerned about any of those updates. I mean, obviously waiting to hear back on Campbell and Akers, but yep. You know, still really weren't sure what we were getting out of them beforehand anyway. So we'll see what's to do there. Top performers of the day at quarterback, we actually had three dual threat quarterbacks. Is Dak Prescott absolutely had the game of his life. 39 fantasy points, 450 yards in the air, 3 rushing touchdowns. Josh Allen, who Eric mentioned at the beginning of the show, actually career highs in both passing yards and touchdowns, 417 yards, 4 touchdowns. And then Kyler Murray, 33 points. He threw for a touchdown, but also got 2 touchdowns on the ground and 67 yards. Who do you expect to see in this list the most rest of season top quarterback performers? Mike, who do you expect to see?
Personally, I would say Kyler Murray. He's somebody I'm always going to worry about because every time I see him, I'm like, man, he's a little on the small side. And I feel like if he takes that one big hit, it could be trouble for him. I think like a Lamar Jackson to Josh Allen's a little bit bigger. It looks a little more able to take a hit. I think Dak Prescott will make it up here a few times. Last year, he kind of was a little seesaw where he would have those enormous weeks and then he would have a couple quiet weeks. So I'd say the two of them, probably Kyler Murray leading the way.
Top running backs of the day were Aaron Jones. Obviously had the absolute game of the day, 45 points, 168 yards on the ground, 2 touchdowns, 68 yards in the air and another receiving touchdown. So insane game for Aaron Jones. Leonard Fournette, he absolutely had a big game. This is what people were hoping to see from him this season, although I don't think they're expecting to see it in Tampa Bay. 103 yards and 2 touchdowns for 27 points. And then Christian McCaffrey, I said he had a disappointing day, but by his standards, because he was still the number 3 running back on the day, 24 points, only 59 yards on the ground and 29 in the air, but he did have 4 catches and added 2 touchdowns. So that obviously helped buoy his point total. And then wide receivers, some exciting wide receivers here in the top performers. Calvin Ridley, 29 points. Stephon Diggs, also 29 points. Ridley, 7 for 109 and 2 touchdowns. Diggs, 8 for 153 and a touchdown. And then third on the day, scary Terry McLaurin, 7 for 125 and a touchdown. He did not look this good last week. Should we be expecting more of this moving forward, Eric?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, it's pretty clear how talented he is. He's the clear number one in this offense. And I don't think we were going to expect Washington football team to go, you know, 10-6 this year. They won the first week, so they had a positive game script, but they're going to be playing from behind. He's going to get some garbage time stats like he did this week. So I love the talent. Definitely going for Scary Terry and probably some more DFS going forward.
And then at tight end, we had kind of a surprise trio. I mean, I say surprise. These were three guys that I think a lot of us were expecting to have a maybe not a breakout season, but do, you know, surprisingly well tight end. Tyler Higbee, 28 points. He went 5-54 and caught 3 touchdowns today. Mike Gesicki, probably the most popular sleeper pick, 8 for 130 and 1 touchdown. And then Jonnu Smith, who I think a lot of people were talking about on our Discord after the AJ Brown, you know, injury was, you know, after he was out for week 2, 4 for 84 and 2 touchdowns for Jonnu Smith. But here's what really surprised me at tight end is 11 different tight ends scored more than 15 PPR points this week. Is this the deepest position that, or the deepest that tight end has been in years?
I think it is. Some of these players are going to be a little boom bust, but we've never had such talent so far down. I mean, farther down the list, it was usually like the Kyle Rudolph and Jason Witten types towards the end of their career. We got a lot of young talent now, and I think it's really exciting. So there's still going to be some down weeks, but yeah, this is as deep as I can remember. I mean, some of my leagues like Hockenson and Goddard were on waivers after week one. So there's lots there this year at tight end.
Yeah. Some other interesting names that, you know, might be available in your league. Mo Alley-Cox in Indianapolis, he had 5 catches for 111 yards. Dalton Schultz in Dallas, 9 catches, 88 yards and a touchdown. Jordan Reed, but, you know, he's just really relevant right now because Kittle is out, but he had 7 for 50 with 2 touchdowns. So a lot of readily available tight ends out there for those who are in need of a tight end. So that's it for the top performers. I mean, we had some really, really great performances, but I want to get into a segment before we get into the games. You know, we've had 2 weeks of play. I want to get into something that we're going to be doing this year. I'm calling it Who's the Imposter? So we had 5 players that I picked that had either big week ones and awful week twos or the other way around. And we're going to find out, hey, which one of these guys should we expect to see moving forward? Is it the guy who scored 20 points or the guy who scored 5? So let's start, Eric, with one of your guys. Let's start with Tyler Boyd. Cincinnati Bengals wide receiver. He only scored 7.3 points in week one as he was pretty much non-existent, and he had 20 points on Thursday. Which Tyler Boyd should we be seeing moving forward?
I think you all know my answer on this one here. I think it's closer to the 20-point Tyler Boyd. He also dropped a touchdown, so he could have had even more than that. And, I mean, it really shows now that week one matchup against the Chargers. We'll get to that later, but they just played a heck of a game against the Kansas City Chiefs. So I think that was just a tough matchup for Burrow in week one. A.J. Green isn't looking at the top of his game, so I expect Boyd to get more heavily involved as we go along.
Mike, let's go to you as the second player I picked is one of your guys. You talked about him as the big winner of the week, David Montgomery, but is the big winner David Montgomery, the Montgomery who scored 21 points this week, is he the Montgomery we should see moving forward, or is the 8-point scorer from week one really the guy that we're going to be seeing?
So I think we should expect a Montgomery somewhere in the 15 to 20 touch range. And today was definitely at the higher end of that. He had 3 catches, including one real big one for a touchdown. So I think this is pretty much the ceiling given the state of the Bears offense. But I think he's someone who's locked into touches. He's going to be safe to get a number of touches every week. And with the Bears defense looking better, he's going to give you some floor of points.
Okay, so you're saying week one, both of you guys saying week one, Tyler Boyd, week one, David Montgomery were the imposters. Let's move on to Adam Thielen, who had a big week one and was completely non-existent today. Only 3 catches today in that horrible Vikings loss to the Colts. Which Adam Thielen is the imposter, Eric?
This is a tough one because I think it's probably a little bit more in the middle. I hate to be positive on all those, but I think I'll go with the big week is more what Adam Thielen's going to do going forward. I mean, Mike nailed it last week. They're going to have some low volume passing days that's just going to sink his week. But I mean, they got nobody else to throw the ball to other than Dalvin Cook. So he's going to have some of these down weeks, but I'm still willing to bet on Thielen being a borderline wide receiver one most weeks. And we're just going to have to deal with these clunkers occasionally, unless Cousins is really just, you know, going down the toilet. We'll see if this continues, but I'm willing to keep sticking with Thielen.
And Mike, Darius Slayton, big week one. A lot of people were really in on him as he's a young, interesting talent, but, you know, really didn't show up. I mean, it was the Bears. Bears have a pretty good defense, but, you know, if Slayton's going to be someone we can trust, we got to be able to play him. Can we trust him, or is this week more of what we're going to see?
So I'm going to unfortunately say we can't really trust anyone in the Giants offense anymore. We saw Evan Ingram leading targets this week, and I think it's going to kind of be a rotating show. You know, for all I know, you know, it'll be Golden Tate with 10 targets next week, and we'll all be saying, oh, it's got to be Tate. We got to go get him. I think Slayton's the most exciting. I don't think he's locked in yet as good enough where we all need him. And I think we're going to see more of these low point totals than the high ones. But if he can put together a couple weeks in a row and keep showing development, then I'm definitely buying in.
And finally, the most large disparity between points. That was terrible English, but that's fine. We're rolling with it. Nyheim Hines, 27 points week one, 1.4 points this week, as he only had the one reception for 4 yards. Which Nyheim Hines is the imposter?
Yeah, I mean, I was going to say his stats when I talked about him earlier, and I thought I had the wrong page up. He had one target and no rushing attempts. So I don't think we can say the real Nyheim Hines is 27 points at this point, because that was just such a disappearance. So I think we got to readjust. He'll do better than this, but you're going to look, the Colts are going to look at this and see Rivers threw it a bunch week one and they lost. They ran the ball a ton with Jonathan Taylor in week two and they won. And I think it's going to be more of that going forward, featuring Taylor on the ground.
Mike, what do you think?
Yeah, I agree. I think he's going to get a few targets. It's going to be better than that 1.4 point outing. Yeah. But I think Taylor kind of showed he can do everything that's needed in that offense. He's got the power of Mac, and he's got the pass catching of Hines, and it's kind of redundant to add anything else besides him. I think Hines will spell him when need be, but I don't think we're going to need much of Hines anymore.
All right, so that was it for our Who's the Imposter. Look for that moving forward. But let's get into the games finally. Let's start with the best game of the day, and not just because I'm a Cowboys fan, but let's be real. That was absolutely the best game to watch today. Insane scoring output, 79 total points. Falcons had a 99.9% win probability with 3 minutes left per ESPN. Falcons fans, you know, for them, this is just pretty much regular territory for them. But I got to ask, you know, you guys are pretty smart football people. What happened on that onside kick?
I mean, it looked like one of those spinning onside kicks that they didn't think was going to go far enough, and they didn't want to botch it and kick it right back over to the Cowboys. So I think they didn't think it was going to go the 10 yards, and it just kind of did a right hook and went past the 10-yard mark. So they obviously should have jumped on it before then. Maybe the spin kind of hypnotized them there, and they just fell asleep waiting for it. But that was not a good hands team there for sure.
It was definitely one of the more unique onside kicks I've ever seen. No tee was used, but you think the team that recovered 3 onside kicks in a single game last year could have, you know, figured out how to not fall prey to that same thing. But either way, it led to a fantastic finish. Zuerlein kicked the game-winning field goal. Let's get into the fantasy-relevant part of this, though. Calvin Ridley, we talked about him. He's the number one wide receiver so far this week. Is he, like, where does he rank for you now among the wide receivers?
I mean, he's up there. I mean, especially with Julio struggling this game. Julio, I mean, I think he's okay, like we said, his hamstring, but Julio dropped a long touchdown. The Falcons are just going to be chucking it each and every week. They're going to have no choice. Their defense is not good. And, you know, he's just locked in on a great volume. He's got, I think, 4 touchdowns through 2 weeks, so he's getting that red zone role going. So he's a borderline wide receiver one, I'd say. It looks like he's having that breakout that we all hoped for. You know, they got enough people around him to draw some attention. I mean, Gage has still been producing. Julio's still there, obviously. Hurst had a big play. So I think it's the sky's the limit for Ridley. He's going to keep doing this for the time being.
So you touch on Gage there. Is Russell Gage legit? You know, obviously he had the big week one as they were, you know, playing all game to come back against Seattle. But this week they were in the lead. Was Gage's volume really more of a product of Julio's hamstring injury, or is Gage, you know, going to feed all year long? Mike, what do you think about for Gage?
So this is looking like a great volume passing attack. As we said, their defense looks pretty terrible. So it looks like they're going to be scoring. They're going to need to score a lot. And I know they've got the Packers coming up soon, so that's going to be another game where I imagine they're going to have to score 40 to have a chance to win, especially with the terror Aaron Rodgers is on. But I think Gage is kind of just the third guy. I think he's replaceable, but he's in a great situation at the moment. I think as long as the team is scoring points like this and as long as the matchups look good for these high-flying outings, that I'm gonna want to roll with him for now. And if anything changes, then I can adjust from there.
We talked about Julio Jones's hamstring injury and obviously keep an eye on that moving forward. Hamstrings always are a big deal, especially for wide receivers who, you know, really rely on, you know, being that explosiveness. But what about Todd Gurley? I mean, I don't know if there's any injury for Gurley. I think he was just, you know, not looking very explosive today. Are we concerned about Todd Gurley moving forward, Eric?
Yeah, I am. This is exactly what I was worried about. I mean, they had the lead in this one, as big of a lead as they could hope for, and he could only muster 21 carries for 61 yards on the ground. So I just, this isn't one of those like super productive running games that I'm trying to get involved with, and I think Gurley's lost a step. So he didn't get a target in the passing game, which is obviously huge in PPR leagues. He's getting a lot of use, so we're going to see those week ones, like, you know, where he gets his 80 yards and a touchdown, and he's not a useless player by any means, but I think the explosive Todd Gurley from old is gone. And if a game where they put up 39, this is all he's doing, that's a bad sign for me.
Mike, are you concerned about Todd Gurley as well?
Yeah, I would agree. Looking at the red zone plays for the Falcons, it looks like they mostly leaned on the pass. And I'm curious if that's kind of like wanting to save Gurley, but although you're 0-2 now, so I don't know what you'd be saving them for, because the season's kind of slipping away and right in front of you. But yeah, it's always rough when a team scores that many points and the running back doesn't get to eat. I mean, it'll happen sometimes, but this is 2 weeks in a row now. So I think Gurley's touchdown upside should be considered a lot lower than we originally thought. I think he's clearly the best back there, but knowing he has the health issues, knowing the touchdown upside drops, I've lost a lot of interest.
Yeah, and speaking of, red zone offense, we're going to go straight to the goal line. The Cowboys scored 4 rushing touchdowns, pretty much all of them from like the 1 or 2 yard line. Ezekiel Elliott only had 1 touchdown. Dak had the other 3. Does this change the value for either of them if they're going to keep giving Dak these, you know, QB sneaks right at the goal line?
I think it was fluky. I mean, I'm pretty certain Zeke had a second one that got called back, and Dak ended up taking it. So this was just a tough break for Zeke. I mean, he still gave you a really good game, but yeah, he could have easily had 2 or 3 touchdowns here. His 7 targets were, I think, 4th on the team. So, I mean, he was super involved as usual. I wouldn't sweat this one bit for Zeke. He's locked in, especially with Barkley hurt now.
And speaking of the targets, you know, you said Zeke was 4th on the team with 7. Dalton Schultz led the team with 10 targets. I threw out his stat line earlier, 9 for 88 yards and a touchdown. What does this do for Dalton Schultz? Is he on your radar, Mike?
With the depth at tight end, I'm going to say not yet. I want to see a bit more. It seems like he's kind of just the guy in the right place to get the points. And I also don't think Dallas is going to have to throw this much. In addition to that, I would say with Gallup and with Cooper and with Lamb and with Zeke and with Dak taking some rushing touchdowns, it seems like he's going to be at best, you know, 5th in the pecking order. And I don't think typically there's going to be this much to go around.
Yeah, a lot of mouths to feed in Dallas. Eric, were you happy to see Andy Dalton get his shot? He got his one pass. They brought him out. Dak had a little bit of an injury scare there at the goal line. He got hit pretty hard and had to, you know, missed like 2 plays. And in those 2 plays, Andy Dalton got a play action pass at the goal line and didn't have anything. So I think he threw it over everyone's head. But hey, Dalton sighting in Dallas.
Very gutsy. They brought him in on the 1 yard line and play action first. It was just, they obviously trust in the player. So now I am, people in Discord were saying that Dalton's the better quarterback jokingly, but I have no interest in Dalton. If he takes over, it's not good for the Cowboys.
Oh no, of course not. But you know, must have made you as a Bengals fan feel pretty good to see Dalton out there.
I didn't want to see him again. thank you for your time, Andy. We're moving on.
Yeah, and moving on, and speaking of quarterbacks we don't want to see again, I'm sure, you know, in Tampa Bay, there's a quarterback that, you know, we're all pretty tired of seeing. But, hey, you know, Tom Brady's there, and you know, they're giving him a lot of opportunities. But it wasn't really a passing game script for Tampa Bay. Are you worried about, you know, Brady's ability to be fantasy relevant? Not a great day from 35 attempts, but only 217 yards, you know, touchdown, interception. You know, didn't do well against New Orleans. Where are you at for Tampa Bay? Or for Tom Brady?
I think there's better days ahead. I mean, once he gets Godwin and Evans back to full speed, maybe figures out this tight end rotation a little bit. They really didn't get anything out of the tight ends, which was surprising. So LeSean McCoy dropped a touchdown. I'm pretty sure Scotty Miller dropped a touchdown as well. So this could have been a lot better day for the Tampa Bay Bucks passing game. So I'm fine with Brady. I mean, he's not going to give you that rushing upside that some of the more exciting quarterbacks give you, but I think he'll have some shootout weeks here later in the season. Their defense is so strong right now, though, he kind of doesn't need to.
Yeah. And go ahead, Mike.
Yeah, I'll say that I am a little bit worried on Brady. I had him as a borderline top 10 quarterback going into the season. With that wealth of weapons and an experienced quarterback, I was kind of hoping for like 2013 Peyton Manning a little bit. not quite to that extreme, but like we'll give him easy plays. The players will do all the work. He'll rack up the points, and we're going to see kind of a monster here. But as Eric said, the defense is looking really good. A little self pat on the back. They were my defensive streamer of the week, and they really killed it. And I think as long as that defense looks really good, there's no reason to try to go out there with Brady and win, like put up 300-400 yards a game. I think they're much more concerned with getting that ring. And as long as that's the case, I think they're going to do only what they need to. And you factor in Leonard Fournette looking good in the running game once he got going. This could easily be a team that, you know, kind of slugs it out and wins 20-10, 20-3, doesn't really try to run things up too much.
And Leonard Fournette, 12 carries, 103 yards, 2 touchdowns, and busted a 46-yard run for a touchdown as well. Ronald Jones coming into the game, a lot of people were thinking, you know, maybe Jones is still the guy in Tampa Bay. 7 for 23, did score a touchdown today, but obviously didn't look anywhere near as explosive as Fournette. So is Fournette the guy now moving forward, or are we still kind of unpredictable here in Tampa Bay, Eric?
There's a lot to unpack here. So overall for the game, Fournette got 26 snaps, Ronald Jones 21, LeSean McCoy 11. Like I said, McCoy dropped a touchdown. Brady was not happy on the sidelines. And then so if you look at Fournette, I mean, if you take out that 46-yard touchdown, it was basically clock-killing mode. This looks a lot closer between the two. But the big story was Brady and Ronald Jones had a fumble on an exchange at one point. Before the fumble, Jones had 48% of the snaps. Fournette had 28%. After the fumble, Jones only had 26%, and Fournette had 58%. So maybe they blamed it on Jones, and they switched to Fournette, and he took advantage. I still think this is going to be more of a 60-40 kind of deal one way or the other, but Fournette definitely found a crack in this game and took advantage. So I wouldn't be too surprised to see Fournette leading the way next week, but Jones is not going to go away here, I would say.
So in the running game, let's go to the other side with Carolina. I mean, Christian McCaffrey, really interesting thing on McCaffrey. So since the start of the 2019 season, he's been held to under 100 total yards just 4 times. One of them was week 17 last year when he only played half the game and still ended up with 98 total yards. The other 3 times were all against the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Today he only had 88 total yards. Last year they held him under 60 total yards both times. You touched on their defense, Mike. Are we avoiding the Tampa Bay run defense moving forward?
So I think this is a case of a team being familiar with the player and having a decent game script against him. Whenever I see one superstar player that has a common opponent, like an in-division opponent, and they struggle against them, I don't put too much into it. I think the Bears for a while had something similar with Dalvin Cook. But I will say, yeah, as I said before, I think the defense is very strong. I think they've built a good team, and I think Brady was smart to pick a team that he knew was going to have a chance, not just, hey, look at all the flashy weapons. I think he knows what he really wants is, can I win a ring on my own? And obviously I'm going to need a great defense to do that. And I want to see another week because I think the Saints still got a decent amount done, even being held up. But now they've bottled up Kamara. They've bottled up to a degree McCaffrey. And I think we've got to start taking notice that that's two amazing running backs. That's two first rounders that they basically shut down.
Yeah, I mean, if you hold McCaffrey to 59 yards rushing, I think you can qualify that as bottling him up, even if he did score 2 touchdowns on the ground. In the air, DJ Moore had 8 for 120. You got to love to see that. Robbie Anderson, 9 for 109. I don't know. There was a guy here on Wednesday talking about Robbie Anderson being must start, something like that. Is he finally in must start territory for you, Eric?
Yeah, it's looking awfully good here. I think this is going to be one of those really nice volume passing attacks, kind of like the Bengals. They're going to get down, they're going to have to chuck it, and they're going to make up for it at the end with a lot of passes. So Robbie Anderson has clearly surpassed Curtis Samuel at this point through 2 weeks anyway. Samuel only had 2 targets, and they did give him 4 carries, but he's a little bit more of the close range gadget type player right now. We'll see if he can do more, but yeah, Robbie Anderson looks good, and they're using him a little bit more than just a deep threat. So I like him. I think he's startable going forward for sure. And it was good to see DJ Moore have a good week because there were a lot of questions about him on our Sit Start article and on Reddit this week. And I think you got to stick with DJ Moore. He's too good of a player.
And then Mike, from one Mike to another, Mike Davis, 8 for 74 in the air. What happened? Do we need to be looking at Mike Davis now on the waiver wire?
Yeah, if Christian McCaffrey is out or if he's limited, I'm definitely keeping an eye on Mike Davis. He's got proven pass catching chops. And when he was with the Bears, I wish they would have used him more in that way. And I think he's a natural fill in. I don't think he would take a full workhorse role. I don't think he would just eat everything. But if he can get McCaffrey's passing game work on a team that knows how to use McCaffrey and likes to throw to the back, that's a very high upside. That's kind of like it's like a Tariq Cohen, Nyheim Hines on steroids.
Yeah, well, Mike Davis is probably buffer than both of those guys combined. So absolutely. just want to reiterate, Robbie Anderson, must start. Eric said it. So moving on to the Bears-Giants game, which was, you know, quite the riveting game. I'm sure everyone who was watching it was really enjoyed watching the game, especially Mike, as the Bears moved to 2-0. But I want to – the 10 different Bears caught a pass today, and none of them were named Anthony Miller, who I started in like three leagues. Like, is Miller worth rostering still? I mean, Allen Robinson was the only Bears player that received more than three targets.
Yeah, so I'm going to go ahead and say this is very reminiscent of last year. I came in with some high hopes on Allen Robinson, Anthony Miller, David Montgomery, and Tariq Cohen. And I drank the Kool-Aid and I came in with high hopes on the same four players again. Allen Robinson, I still love. I still will back him, even though he had a bit of a slow day. Anthony Miller, I'm a bit worried, though, because we see the rookie Darnell Mooney kind of eating away at some of his targets, and he's done some good work. He caught a touchdown. Trubisky was scrambling. Mooney adjusted, ran to the left side, the far side of the end zone, got himself open. Trubisky saw him and hit him for a touchdown. And I think he's going to see that and say, you know, I can trust this kid. When everything broke down, he went and did what he had to. I don't think this is going to be a high-volume passing attack, despite how the first half looked, where Trubisky had two touchdowns at about 150 yards. I'm never going to want to count on this game or this team. So besides Allen Robinson, everyone else is going to be tough. You're going to have that week where you go, oh, I should have started Miller, and then there's going to be that I should have started Mooney, and who knows which week's going to be which one.
So does Cohen also fall into that same category? And if so, should we be rostering Tariq Cohen?
Yeah, that's a great question. The one target today really hurts. There's not a reason that I can think of that you shouldn't be able to target him out in space and just kind of let him run wild. It's a great another weapon to use, especially when Ted Ginn Jr. is inactive and you need a third weapon out there on the field as a receiver. I think it's fair to drop him if you're done. As a Bears fan, I can't bear to do that yet, so I'm going to hold on to him for at least 17 more weeks. But that's just my bad decision making.
And I saw what you did there, saying if you can bear to drop Tariq Cohen. I like that. We talked about Saquon Barkley's injury already and what that means for the Giants running backs. Touched a little bit on Sterling Shepard's injury, but you know, Golden Tate 5 for 47, Evan Ingram 6 for 65. Hey, let's do who's the imposter real quick on Evan Ingram. 6 for 65 today. Did not have, you know, anything like that last week. Should we see more of this or more of that?
I'm in on Evan Ingram, especially if Barkley's out for a while. They're going to need somebody who's explosive to get the ball to, and that's him. He's probably the best player on their offense now. So I'm all in on Ingram. I think he'll have better days. We've still never seen this pass-catching core, I feel like, all together between Sterling Shepard, Golden Tate, Evan Ingram. Someone's always hurt, and we'll see how long Shepard's out for. But if he's out, it's just him and Slayton and Golden Tate, and I think he's got a huge workload ahead of him.
It was like the monkey's paw for getting Saquon Barkley. And then, you know, they really wanted Daniel Jones, but they had to trade up to get Daniel Jones. And then no one gets to stay healthy.
Yeah.
A whole lot of misfortune there in New York. Anyone else we need to touch on here in this Giants-Chicago game?
Yeah, real quick. I mean, like I said earlier a little bit, but Deion Lewis saw 57 snaps, Saquon Barkley 8, Elijah Penny 4. I would not get tricked into thinking that's going to happen for a second straight week. So that was the big thing. And then just like Mike said, this passing game is going to be hit or miss. I mean, they ran the ball 32 times. So this is the problem with the Bears, is that they know they have a good defense, and against a bad secondary like the Giants, they're still going to want to run the ball a lot. So super disappointing game to get only 3 catches on 9 targets from Allen Robinson, but he's still good to go. But it's just, they're going to run the ball when they can, and you're going to have some weeks like this out of the Bears pass catchers.
Yeah, I'll say as far as the Giants go, they kind of feel like a rich man's version of the Bears passing game, where I think Daniel Jones is a little... that's supposed to sound bad. Where Daniel Jones, I would say, is a little better than Trubisky. They get a little more volume. They're a little more reliable to get yards. but they have the same problem in that I don't know who's going to do it from week to week. Like one week, Shepard's going to have 100 yards and a touchdown, and the next week it'll be Tate, and then it'll be Ingram, and it'll kind of bounce around. So I think Ingram's the most usable because he's at tight end, and tight end ultimately, even though it's a little deeper this year, it's still always a tough position. But everybody else, I'm going to be too skittish on to really want to rely on.
Yeah, and I will say in defense of the Giants, they have played the Steelers and the Bears to start the year, so they might be able to open it a little bit more in an easier matchup. It's been a tough go so far.
All right, that's enough of that. Let's move on to a game that actually had points being scored in it, and that was Tennessee against Jacksonville. Tennessee moves to 2-0 on the year, and a couple of nail-biter wins for them because, once again, they relied on Steven Gostkowski to make the go-ahead field goal in the final minutes. Titans really almost let this one slip away. They had a big lead early, and Jacksonville just kept chipping away at it. Gardner Minshew went 30 for 45, 339 yards, 3 touchdowns. And James Robinson, 16 for 102 on the ground and a touchdown. So this Jacksonville Jaguars offense seems like an actual real NFL offense all of a sudden.
Yeah, it does. Minshew looks really good. He's distributing the ball. He's moving in the pocket. He's done a good job. The problem is he's just spreading it around to everyone. So for fantasy purposes, it's a little rough here. DJ Chark was out targeted by Cole, Conley, and Eifert, and he was tied with three others with 4 targets. So he's just spreading the ball around. Not great for fantasy, but James Robinson looks good, and Minshew's looking good. So if he does start to focus on someone a little more, I think there's something to jump on. But it's hard to trust these receivers now. They're just kind of trading off weeks from time to time. Chark produced on his 4 targets, 4 for 84, but there's not much margin for their error there if you got 4 targets.
Mike, of these Jacksonville receivers, which one are you the most interested in? Other than Chark, as that's the one everyone was interested in coming into the season.
Well, that's going to make the decision decidedly tougher. I think I would still say Laviska Shenault. I like the upside. I like that they were using him in different ways. 5 carries, 4 targets. It's anytime you see a young weapon that they just want to get on the field any way they can, as long as he doesn't get stuck in the dreaded gadget role. A la Curtis Samuel, that my fallen my fallen crush. But I think Shenault is someone I'm watching. As Eric said, I think the targets and the touchdowns will kind of bounce around. I think Minshew will kind of find whoever's open, and it's going to be everyone's guess as good as mine who's going to be on that play.
Yeah, and then James Robinson, like I said, had a really big game, and we were really excited for him after a week one where he got every single carry. Eric, where do you think James Robinson is going to rank for you next week?
I definitely need to bump him up. I've been conservative with him. I just didn't think this Jaguars offense would look good 2 weeks in a row. Their defense has held their own. I thought they were going to get run all over by the Titans and just kind of derail their game script here. So, we got to raise him up. I mean, he still only had 16 attempts. He had a long of 39, so if you take that out, I mean, it's always dangerous to do that. But I don't know. I still don't think he's got, like, big-time upside, but he's certainly moving up the list, probably more in that David Montgomery range now. I don't know. Mike, maybe Mike would think differently. But we got to adjust and raise him up our rankings a little bit because they seem to clearly like him.
Well, what do you say, Mike, David Montgomery or James Robinson?
I was hoping the question wouldn't come to that.
He's just the one I think of as like the volume running back, you know?
Yeah, I think based on what James Robinson showed, I kind of know what Montgomery is. I think I'd be more excited about James Robinson right now, to be honest. He's in a backfield where he doesn't really seem to have any competition. There's Chris Thompson there, but I don't think that's ever going to be too much. I think everyone's going to be afraid of hurting him based on the injury history we've seen there. And I think especially with a lot of big names going down, Saquon Barkley, Christian McCaffrey, I'm definitely interested in a guy like Robinson because you know there's teams right now who are desperate for another running back. And they might just look down the list, see a James Robinson and say 100 yards, touchdown. That's great. I'll take it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, if there was any week for Chris Thompson to break out or have a big game, it was a week like this where Jacksonville was playing from behind the entire time. So I know there's a lot of people who, when Fournette was released by the Jaguars, a lot of people raced to get Chris Thompson as they felt he might have some sort of a steady role. I think it's pretty safe that you can cut bait on Thompson now. He did catch a touchdown this week, but only 4 targets and only 2 carries. Like I said, in a week where this should have been you know, a big week for Thompson. So doesn't really look like they're going to be using him too much. Let's move to Derrick Henry. Speaking of volume running backs, I mean, Derrick Henry is the volume running back. He got 25 carries today, but only 84 yards, no touchdowns. I mean, obviously, if you have Henry, you know, you're starting him, you're really relying on him. But are we concerned about Derrick Henry now?
No, I mean, this is one of those weeks that the people who are down on Derrick Henry will point to. And it's really easy to say, yeah, the weeks he doesn't get a touchdown, he doesn't have a passing game role. He had two targets, no catches. Like, it's really easy to point to this one and say 25 carries, 84 yards. That's just not going to get it done. But I mean, more weeks than not, he's going to score you a touchdown. He'll have plenty of two touchdown weeks. As long as they can kind of shore up this defense a little bit and play with some leads, I'm not worried about Derrick Henry. So maybe I bumped him up a couple spots too high this week, but I just thought this was a great matchup against Jacksonville. They were bad defending the run last year. So maybe temper expectations a little more than we were, but he's still an RB1.
Mike, you agree with that?
Yeah, I don't tend to be a Derrick Henry truther. I think he's a great back, but I don't think I think I'm on the lower end of ranking him whenever I see rankings. That being said, this doesn't change my opinion. He's still a strong runner. If he gets free into open space, he's great chance to just take it to the house because he's so big and fast. We didn't see anything passing touchdown-wise that would really change my opinion. As Eric said, touchdown luck is going to bounce your way some weeks, and you get three rushing touchdowns from Dak, and some days it's going to bounce against you, and Ryan Tannehill throws four touchdowns. So,
well, and Tannehill, so last week he threw over 40 times for like the first time in years. And this week, much more of a Tennessee game. He only threw for 24 attempts, but four touchdowns in those 24 attempts, two to Jonnu Smith, as Jonnu Smith went 4 for 84. Adam Humphries had a big game, 5 for 48 with a touchdown. I mean, big game by Adam Humphries standards. And then Corey Davis, who, you know, was a big breakout candidate after week one, you know, 3 for 36, did score a touchdown. Are we still on the Corey Davis hype train?
It was funny. I think he scored that touchdown on the first drive, and it was kind of like, oh, here we go, Corey Davis. And then I think he had two more catches the rest of the way or something. But no, I mean, assuming A.J. Brown's not out long, I'm not too interested. Jonnu Smith is the one who I think it could be in the middle of a full-blown breakout if they had more passing volume. I mean, he caught 4 of 5 for 84 yards and two touchdowns. He just looks, I mean, he's kind of like A.J. Brown. He just, when you see him on the field, he looks different than some of these other tight ends. So I love Jonnu Smith. It's just with five targets, it's a little worrisome that he's going to have some down weeks. But, I mean, you could say that about any tight end just about. So I really like Jonnu Smith the most. And then A.J. Brown, assuming he gets over this soon, he'll slot back in as the number one.
Mike, what do you think? You think Corey Davis still worth keeping an eye on, worth rostering?
Yeah, I would keep an eye on him. I think he's good enough that he's earned a roster spot somewhere. That being said, I don't trust him as we kind of saw, five targets, three catches. His day was really saved by the touchdown. If it wasn't for that touchdown, everyone would be saying, oh, he's back to old Corey Davis. But because he gets that score, they're like, oh, he put up double-digit points again. Double-digit points 2 weeks in a row. That's great. He's breaking out again. Yeah. And I think he's one of those players people bit hard on when he came into the league. And so it's really hard to say goodbye to him. Ryan Tannehill, I was super impressed with. 4 touchdowns, 75% completion with no A.J. Brown. I did not expect that. I thought this was going to be a bad week for the Titans passing offense. He's somebody that if you have a league where you can make trades happen, I would be trying to send him to somebody because I don't think 4 touchdown days are going to be the norm. And if you can get someone who buys into that and says, oh man, he did it without AJ Brown, this is going to be amazing, then by all means, send him away and pick up a running back or a wide receiver or something.
Yeah. I mean, you know, obviously the 4 touchdowns isn't going to happen every week, but you know, it's the Titans. Titans, this is what they want to do. They want to run the ball a lot. They don't want to throw it a lot, you know. So we're still good on Derrick Henry, and, you know, we're still good on A.J. Brown, hopefully when he returns from injury. And Jonnu Smith, breakout player, as Eric said. But other than that, not a whole lot else in this Tennessee offense. Let's move to, the Rams-Eagles game. You know, like I said on the Wednesday preview show, we're going to see the battle of 1 versus 2 from that draft. You know, Jared Goff going first overall, Carson Wentz going second. And pretty much the story the whole time has been, you know, hey, the Eagles got the better quarterback. Well, Jared Goff put an end to that today. Really showed that, you know, he controls the game, not Carson Wentz. Carson had a really rough game. Jared Goff did much better, 20 for 27, 267 yards, 3 touchdowns. Eagles not looking good to start the season. Carson Wentz was a popular kind of late round pick for quarterback. Are we cutting bait on Carson Wentz and looking elsewhere?
I have a hard time getting a read on this Eagles team. I feel like, he didn't take any sacks this week, so that was a great step in the right direction. But he threw 2 picks. I think one of them was a pretty bad one, if I recall correctly. So, 26 for 43, 242, no touchdowns. That's far from ideal. He gets you a rushing touchdown, so that helps. But there may be better options on waivers. It's just, it just depends on what the depth is. But they do have a matchup against the Bengals, so I would probably hang on to him for that one next. But then he gets the 49ers, the Steelers, and the Ravens. So you might only get one more week out of Wentz here because it gets pretty brutal if the 49ers have any healthy players left. But, I have a hard time figuring out this Eagles offense, to be perfectly honest. They're the sum of their parts, it's just it should be better than this, and it's not. So. I would be looking for other options very quickly here.
Well, and does that scare you off of Eagles receivers? DeSean Jackson. I guess Zach Ertz were, probably still hanging on to, but now Dallas Goedert. Where are you at on the Eagles receivers, Mike?
So I would say my interest probably extends about as far as the running back and the two tight ends. I like what Miles Sanders showed today. I think he's basically locked in as the dude. And you've got Zach Ertz and Dallas Goedert, I still like a lot. They both had high target numbers. But I think you kind of see the problem with the Eagles when you look at DeSean Jackson's stat line. A guy like him, you're hopefully hitting a few times, big plays, rip things open, and then you kind of hit underneath easily because they're afraid of DeSean Jackson running away. And when a guy like him is pulling down 9 targets and 6 catches for 64 yards, that's like, ooh, they must be desperate. Because it's not his strength to necessarily be a possession guy. I would say maybe someone develops like Rager, but in the meantime, I'm not interested in anybody but the tight ends here.
I'm still interested in Rager personally. 4 catches, 4 targets, 41 yards. You don't want to start him, but I would hang on to Rager. Just see if, they need that spark out in the receiving core. Maybe he can kind of take charge here and be a little bit more of a do-it-all player than Jackson is.
Yeah, that's fair. If I had Rager, I wouldn't say I'm dropping him. I'm just saying, yeah, you got to hold on to him. You hope you another week, another 2 weeks. He's like, whoa, Rager broke out. Now they've got their receiver. Definitely agree.
All right, so those are the Eagles receivers. We're interested in the tight ends. Not maybe DeSean Jackson just because of volume. Keep your close eye on Rager. Miles Sanders did well. Everyone was excited to see him coming into the season. He had a lot of helium in his hype balloon, and honestly, it was all justified. 20 for 95, added 3 for 36 in the air as well. So Sanders looking great. If you have him, got to feel really good about that. Let's go to the other side where Jared Goff threw 3 touchdowns and all 3 were to Tyler Higbee. The last few years, Goff's thrown about 20% of his touchdowns to a tight end. And with Higbee catching 3 today, that's pretty much, close to his quota for tight ends for the year. So is now the time we should be selling on Tyler Higbee, Mike?
Yeah, I would be a big sell on Higbee. Once again, I think a lot of players in fantasy football kind of look at the stat line, look at the points and say, whoa, this guy had 20 or 30. And they don't necessarily put the work in to see how it happened. In this case, again, 5 receptions, 54 yards. That's fine. That's perfectly normal for a tight end. But whenever someone's got a ballooned touchdown number like that, the first thing the next opponent's going to do is say, okay, Tyler Higbee in the red zone. We got to see what the Eagles couldn't figure out because we got to figure it out. And I think even if it's as simple as, Gerald Everett's getting those looks in the red zone instead, because now he's open. I'm selling big time on him.
Are you selling on Robert Woods, who is only 2 for 14 today on 5 targets, did do well in the running game, or I think, yeah, scored a touchdown on the ground, but only 2 for 14 in the air. Are we concerned about Woods?
So it's definitely frustrating to see this passing game shrink a bit. And you would hope that even if it shrunk, there was still enough for Cooper Kupp and Robert Woods. But it looks like we're going to have some weeks. I think Kupp was slow last week, finishing with low numbers. I'm not worried. I still think they're both going to put up good seasons. We just might see some low totals sometimes. The good news is they still got creative. And as you said, they got him some carries in the rushing game, and he still got a touchdown. I think the system here is good enough where I'm not going to give up on either receiver.
All right, Eric, I've got probably the toughest question of the day for you. Hopefully you're ready for it.
I'm ready.
Let's talk about the Rams backfield. Akers comes out of the game early, and then, you know, Malcolm Brown had the big week last week. Daryl Henderson barely involved. And then Henderson leads the team in touches, leads the team in yards, you know, gets three targets in the air. Malcolm Brown, 11 of 47 on the ground, did not get targeted in the passing game. So make some sense of this for me, please.
Okay. Yeah. It was a bummer because they started out the game with Akers, drafted a ton of Akers. I'm high on him. He was getting the looks first drive again. He was getting red zone looks. They were down to about the 5 yard line, and he comes out of the game with a rib injury. Rib injury is probably not the best thing for a running back to have, so this could be concerning. So Akers, you know, had his chance and got hurt, and here we go. I would run out if people dropped Daryl Henderson and grab him immediately, because this is what I always thought was going to happen with Malcolm Brown. He's going to be just fine. He's going to be serviceable, but one of these more talented backups are going to take over and have a big week, and I think Henderson probably did that. I mean, he had a 40-yard rush for the long, 12 carries, 81 yards, and a touchdown. He had two catches for 40 yards on three targets, and the incomplete target to him was I think it was from about the 18-yard line or so, kind of a shot down the field that he just missed. So, I mean, he had an end zone target. I just think that either of these backs other than Malcolm Brown are the ones I want. So maybe people held on to Henderson, but I bet he hit some waiver wires. So if he's out there, grab him. But I mean, the Rams ran the ball 39 times. Some of those were with receivers, but they clearly want to run the ball, and it's working. They're 2-0. So I expect there to be plenty of carries to go around for two running backs. If Akers is out, I think they're probably both borderline startable, but I like Henderson for his upside.
Mike, do you have the same take on the Rams backfield, or do you have a different view?
Yeah, I'm also big on Henderson. I remembered back to a year or two ago when Henderson was coming in, drafted by the Rams, and everybody was ready for the immediate breakout. They thought he was going to take over, and Gurley held him off, which is hardly an embarrassing thing to say. I mean, Todd Gurley is an amazing running back. And I think once that happened, everybody kind of forgot about him or gave up on him a little bit. And now you see an amazing game, and I would think, oh, it's finally his time. And there's no reason to think he's not going to be the guy. If Akers is out and it's Henderson or Malcolm Brown, I think Henderson's clearly the more electric talent. And he's the guy, if they're both getting about the same number of touches, I think he's going to tend to do more with that work. So he's the guy I'm definitely interested in. And as Eric said, he's probably going to be my top waiver ad this week. Any league where you can find him, especially if you're dealing with Akers or Brown as one of your starters, you got to go and put down something big for him.
Yeah. And he did almost nothing last year. So this is this is pretty significant that he produced this game. This is the first time he's done it. So I think this is a breakout game for Henderson.
Yeah. Henderson was kind of the popular number two in LA. Obviously everyone was drafting Cam Akers as the top running back there. And then Henderson was usually the guy I saw second off the board. So I think people were pretty, you know, at least giving Henderson more of a shot than Brown. And, you know, Henderson came into week one dealing some injury issues. So maybe this is the week that we thought we would see last week for Henderson, just, you know, had the injury and so was delayed by a week. Let's move to Miami, where the feed apparently doesn't always come through and we can't watch the game. But that's okay, because Josh Allen did what he did. 417 yards in the air, 4 touchdowns. We talked about that already. What does this do for Stephon Diggs and John Brown? Are they both, are they must start? Are they, you know, depending on your situation, where are we at on Diggs and Brown?
I think they're pretty rock solid. This is 2 straight weeks they both produced, and they're chucking the ball. So let's ride this while we can. I mean, Diggs had a monster game, 13 targets, 8 catches, 153 yards. So you're obviously starting him 2 straight weeks on a new team. This is pretty huge. And we've kind of always been waiting for this breakout from Diggs. And I mean, he's obviously had really good seasons, but maybe some of that was just the Vikings limiting pass attempts, and he never quite had that consistency. So if he's getting 13 targets every game, fire him up. And John Brown showed enough consistency last year with Allen that he might be able to get it by on these 6 targets like he had this week. So I think they're both pretty consistent plays right now until we see otherwise.
Yeah, Bills kind of surprising everyone. This is a different Bills team than we expected coming into the season. Definitely different from the Bills team we saw last season. So big weeks for Diggs and Brown. And then not so big weeks, once again, for Singletary and Moss. They're still splitting work pretty evenly. And I know that we've kind of seen this as like, hey, we're kind of excited about both. But is this maybe that they're just both not startable, Mike?
So I think as long as these passing numbers hold up, that's probably true. It's going to be tough for either one to get his mark. I think it'll be easier for Moss, and I say this as a Singletary fan, but he's got the chance for the red zone work, and I think Singletary's basically locked out of that role. So I think if one is going to have a chance to be successful right now while they're pass happy, it's Moss. But I think looking at the upcoming schedule, they've got the Rams next week. Then they're at the Raiders, at the Titans, and against the Chiefs. I don't think the pass happy thing is going to hold up personally. I don't see Allen as someone who's going to continue throwing 300 yards a week. I think he's going to find his legs again. And I think the team's going to try to lean on those running backs. I still believe in both of them, but it is hard seeing these first two outings to say, oh yeah, they'll be fine. I still know in my heart that the Bills will be a run team eventually. unless they keep proving me wrong. But yeah, it's hard at the moment to go into battle with Moss or Singletary, and I was someone heavily invested in Singletary this year.
Yeah, and then, you know, from one crowded backfield to the other in Miami, I mean, Myles Gaskin definitely had the biggest day, 7 for 46 on the ground, and then another 6 receptions for 36 yards through the air. But Jordan Howard, once again, getting the touchdown despite on the season now, I believe 13 carries and 11 yards and 2 touchdowns. So with Matt Breida also getting work there, what are we doing with this Dolphins backfield, Eric?
I mean, those 7 targets, 6 catches are super encouraging for Gaskin, and that's going to keep him playable most weeks. It's just you probably wish you had better options. But, I mean, this is a tough Bills defense, so there could be better weeks ahead from him. But, I mean, if he's going to be that you know, involved in the passing game, then that's a fantasy, you know, flex play every week. So I wouldn't, you know, it's going to be frustrating when Howard takes the touchdowns, but he should score some occasionally, and the passing game works huge. So, I don't know, Breida, he almost scored a touchdown at one point, but he's still, 7 carries. So it's actually tied with Gaskin, so they got him a little more involved, but he's not seeing much in the passing game. So Gaskin's the one you want here. Jordan Howard, I mean, unless you're in a super deep standard league where you're just chasing a random touchdown, though, there's no use to have Jordan Howard on your team. So Gaskin, maybe Breida, but I don't even think he's worth a roster spot right now.
I'm looking forward to seeing Jordan Howard continue his reign of less than 1 yard per carry and 1 touchdown per week. So Mike Gesicki, again, you know, big breakout game, 8 receptions, 130 yards, a touchdown. Devontae Parker caught a touchdown as well. I know he was questionable coming into this game, so definitely good to see a good game from him. But are they just really dependent on Ryan being Fitzmagic and not Fitztragic?
Yeah, so I'll say I was high on Gesicki as a tight end who's a little cheaper. Because I think a lot of people were rightfully down on that Miami offense. And I think he's shown well so far. It's going to be an inconsistent team. We kind of say this a lot, but there's a lot of bad passing offenses right now. And then there's a few that are inconsistent where 1 week you might get 300 yards and another week you might end up with like 170. And nothing better epitomizes that than the Vikings. But yeah, I like Gesicki. I don't think it's reasonable to expect 130 and a touchdown each week, but I think we can expect him to see, you know, 5+ targets, and that's good enough to make him a starting tight end for me.
Yeah, Gesicki gets used, you know, a lot more like a receiver than a tight end. Makes him really, interesting from, you know, a fantasy perspective. And again, you know, a big week like this might be the best game he's going to have all season, but he's, I think, you know, one of the better tight ends to potentially have games like this each week. Let's go ahead and let's move on to a game that I don't really know how much we learned about in this Colts Vikings game. Colts 28, Vikings 11. Colts get their first win of the season. Vikings now 0-2. So Mo Alie-Cox, 2nd in receiving yards on the day, and we know Rivers likes tight ends. So do you have an eye on Alie-Cox moving forward?
I'm not sure the exact status of Jack Doyle. I would imagine once he comes back, it puts a damper on it. So I think there's enough depth at tight end. I'm probably not looking his way. I know there's a lot of people that really like him. They've been waiting for this breakout for a while, so it's good to see. I don't think they're going to lead the team in targets like this every week. But I don't know. I suppose there's some intrigue here, especially in deeper leagues. But I think there are better options out there.
Mike, do you have any interest in Alie-Cox?
No, I'm going to be passing for the moment. The team was still pretty low volume, 214 yards, and it's just kind of fluky that Allie Cox ends up with more than half of those yards. So if the other tight ends go down or he does this again, I'll be looking. At that point, he'd probably be gone. But, yeah, I think it's just a one-time thing.
Well, let's talk about someone who's more exciting and definitely more hyped. And, Eric, you're going to want to take your own victory lap on this one. And he's a rookie running back. Jonathan Taylor, the big game, 26 carries. It was a good game script for that, but still. And then 101 yards and a touchdown. So obviously this is, you know, exactly what all the Jonathan Taylor managers were hoping for when they drafted him. So, Eric, is this what we can expect to see moving forward?
Oh, yeah, this was great news. I mean, he got 49 snaps. Jordan Wilkins was actually second with 17 and kind of, you know, ran out the clock mode. That's when he got those. Nyheim Hines only had 9. So, I mean, Taylor just completely took over. It was a little bit of a bummer. He only got 2 targets after getting, I believe, 6 in the first week and 6 catches. But those will come around. I think this game really just showed. I picked this for the under in the beating the spread column I do every week with Jeff Berkus. Both of these teams want to run the ball. I think the Colts, especially after losing week one, letting Rivers throw it too much, they went back to the run. And if they're going to do that, it's Jonathan Taylor. So, yeah, great game. I mean, he gets 100 yards and a touchdown. I think there are going to be bigger days ahead. I think, I mean, he's still kind of, you know, getting up to speed in the NFL here. So they're going to have to pass more some weeks, but I think he can catch some balls those weeks. So, yeah, this is all, you know, all systems go for Taylor here. We should all be excited about this.
Yeah, Taylor had a better game than Dalvin Cook, who is a first-round pick coming into the season. Dalvin Cook, 14 for 63, did score a touchdown, but that's 2 weeks in a row where he didn't really run for a lot of yards and didn't get a ton of carries as he was 12 for 50 last week. So, you know, are we like, I mean, where are we at on Dalvin Cook? Is he going to be kind of that, you know, top 12, top 10 running back that we're expecting? I mean, some people drafted him top 5 that we're expecting to see before the season, or are we really kind of worried about Dalvin Cook now, Mike?
So I'm still going to happily roll Cook out every week. He owns the backfield there. And some days this Minnesota offense just kind of runs into weird performances, like today, where you end up with like 44 plays on offense, which is just kind of crazy. But that I'm still going to roll full confidence with Cook. I will say something maybe of a hot take. If I had my choice between the two and I was drafting today, I might take Jonathan Taylor over him, because I think he's locked in behind an amazing offensive line, and he's caught the ball well, he's run well. I think he's going to be an easy first-round pick next year. But, yeah, Cook is fine. There's no problem for me with him. He's not hurt, which is really the only thing I worry about. And I think better days will come for the Minnesota offense.
Yeah, he looked really good on his touchdown run. The most frustrating thing is they only got him 2 targets. I mean, I know they didn't pass the ball enough, but, I mean, he is their – clear with Adam Thielen, they should be the focal points of the offense, and you got to get Dalvin Cook more than 2 targets in the passing game. He's talented there, so that's my biggest complaint, is they need to throw him the ball more. And I think, you know, this offense has been struggling. I hope they start to open this up, because they're just playing too conservative. But maybe 3 interceptions and 3 sacks from Kirk Cousins, maybe we'll not encourage them to open things up here.
Eric, would you also take Taylor over Cook now if you were drafting today, or would you still go Cook first?
Oh, man, that's tough, because I was not budging on Cook this offseason. People were lowering him because of the injury history and the holdout, and I thought he had RB1 overall upside if he was healthy. That's a tough one, but this offense does not look good at all. So they're pretty close. It'll be interesting where I rank them next week, that's for sure. But, yeah, why not? Let's go with Taylor. I've been on him all offseason, so let's move him up a spot ahead. I think it's going to get better for Dalvin Cook, but I don't know. This offense is just concerning.
Hot take, the rookie running back guy took the rookie running back in this, this or that. So, and then other than Adam Thielen, who we touched on earlier, are there any receivers worth talking about in this game?
Man, I think Kirk Cousins makes it really, really hard to love that passing attack. I was looking this up earlier because I knew the last week was bad too. He has something like 150 yards total and 5 interceptions between the last 2 games in the first half. That's bad for everybody. I mean, it puts them behind, so they use less Cook. It puts them behind, so it shows they're not really using Thielen well early on. If this attack was working better, I'd have some interest in Justin Jefferson. He had a decent day. But at the moment, this can barely even hold up one wide receiver. I mean, they had 113 passing yards today.
Yeah, that's not great, Chief. So let's go from this terrible passing attack to what is possibly the best offense in the NFL right now. I mean, the Green Bay Packers are definitely looking like the team to beat so far in the NFC. They scored 42 points. I think that was exactly the same number they scored last week. They definitely were over 40 points last week, and they absolutely blew the doors off the Detroit Lions, who scored 21. So it was a 42-21 game for the Green Bay Packers. But here's the thing, you know, just because they had a blow-up game doesn't mean that we really learned anything from a fantasy perspective. And I'm looking up and down the stat sheet, and I kind of don't feel like we've really changed any opinions today on the Green Bay Packers.
I would agree with that. I mean, Aaron Jones just blew up, and we knew he had this in him. He had a 75-yard touchdown run, and he looked awesome in the passing game. He made a really tough catch, led the team in targets. So once Devontae Adams, you know, gets hurt, it's kind of a gaping hole there. And, I mean, Valdez-Scantling had 3 for 64 on 7 targets. Your favorite, Alan Lazard, another 5 targets. I think that's what he had last week, 45 yards. But I mean, this is, they want to run the ball. If they get a lead like this on a probably a bad team like the Lions, they're just going to feed Aaron Jones and even Jamal Williams. I mean, he turned 8 carries into 63 yards. So he's kind of been solid this year through 2 weeks as well. He's still got his own role. So yeah, same thing. It's the running game. It's Devontae Adams when healthy.
Yeah. This does make me worry a little bit about the volume for Rodgers when Adams is out. It could be just, you know, 1 week versus 1 week, and maybe I'm overreading into things. But he loses Adams, and he drops down to 240 yards. The completion percentage drops a bit. I think it's going to hurt Rodgers the longer Adams is out, because he really is irreplaceable in this offense. He's the one unique weapon in the passing game besides Jones. And I think the team really needs him. And if he was out for a long time, I would start to worry about this team. But so far, I think the Aaron Rodgers is going to be bouncing back. Thought I had this year is looking pretty good. And I think Aaron Jones is still an excellent weapon, and you're lucky to have him on your team if you drafted him.
Well, I did on one league. I waited too long on quarterback and grabbed Rodgers, and, you know, felt pretty good about that. But now I'm realizing that's not the Aaron you were talking about. I think you're talking about Aaron Jones, and I was thinking about Aaron Rodgers. There's too many Aarons in Green Bay. They got to send one of them away. And Rodgers has been there longer, so clearly I think they just need to trade Aaron Jones. I don't think I drafted Aaron Jones anywhere because I was worried about his boom bust, you know, week to week potential. And I think, you know, Aaron Jones has had games like this before. There's a couple last year, he definitely scored over 40 points, at least once. So he's definitely liable to do stuff like this. On the side of Detroit, though, I mean, this backfield, again, another mess. This week, Kerryon Johnson gets a touchdown. At one point, I think Johnson had the first 5 carries for Detroit and then ends up with only 8 carries. Adrian Peterson gets involved again, 7 carries for 41 yards. DeAndre Swift, still probably the best looking. I mean, 5 for 12 on the ground, that sucks. But 5 targets, 5 receptions, 60 yards in the air. So, you know, do we want any of these running backs still? Or can we just not roster any Detroit Lions running back, Eric?
I hate it all. It's ridiculous. I mean, Kerryon leads the way with 20 snaps, DeAndre Swift 19, Adrian Peterson 15. That's just a miserable split here. You'd think that Swift would get a bump in a game they're losing like this. So, I mean, I agree. Swift's the one that I want to happen here. But, they just inexplicably got Kerryon back involved. So, I guess it's a three-headed monster going forward. I mean, Swift was third on the team with 5 targets, so he's going to be involved, 60 yards. That's great. He salvaged your day if you started him. And I still think he's maybe a buy low, but I wouldn't give up too much for him. But I bet the people who drafted him are probably panicking. So, but now this is just a miserable situation to deal with, and we probably need somebody to get dinged up or something for someone to separate here.
Yeah, I would agree. I think the only way I'm interested in this backfield is if it's Swift who starts breaking out. Even then, I don't trust the Lions to do the right thing and give the best player all the carries. I think they would still happily give each guy like 8 carries every week and just be like, oh, they're all good. Why not just do it this way? But yeah, I agree with the dinged up thing. If one of them or two of them go down, I think the remaining one would be valuable. But unless that happens, I think we're going to see a lot of box scores like this. And we're going to try to be chasing that high week where we say, oh, Kerryon had a touchdown. Maybe I could go with him again this week.
And any of the receivers change value for you? I mean, Hockenson had 4 targets, but he did turn that into 4 receptions. Marvin Jones catches the touchdown. I mean, with Kenny Golladay out, it's kind of hard to see what's going to happen with him back. But I mean, any Lions receiver, you know, change your opinion today?
No, I mean, Hawkinson's encouraging. Now that's two pretty solid games in a row. He disappeared at times last year. So I think we're in good shape with Hawkinson. Definitely disappointing Marvin Jones, just not taking advantage of this opportunity. So he may be one of those types. It's just you're better off if Galladay's in there to take some pressure off of him. So he's startable. He scored a touchdown, got six targets, but nothing too exciting there until he scores four touchdowns next week. But that's how Marvin Jones is. So now nothing much changed here.
Yeah, I'll say I like that Hawk did it again. I like that he's looking like he's going to emerge more consistently. And I'm sure at this point it's too late because everybody seems to love him. And 2 weeks now where he's done something, everyone's going to be all aboard the Hawk train and they're going to say, oh, this next week's going to be the mega one. And everyone will know. Marvin Jones, I think, yeah, he benefits from Galladay being there. As Eric said, I think he plays better when he is there. I like what I'm seeing from Cephus, Quintez Cephus. That's 2 weeks in a row he's been involved. Not as many targets this week, but they've clearly given him a lot of work already. And part of that's probably that he's filling in for the Galladay role. But if he keeps getting a lot of work, maybe there's a chance he takes the Marvin Jones role and becomes the number two. So he's someone I've got my eye on just in case.
So let's move on to the Pittsburgh Steelers, Denver Broncos, where Pittsburgh moves to 2-0 on the season, beating the Broncos 26-21. Broncos dropped to 0-2. We talked about pretty much everything relevant in the Broncos, you know, with the injuries, you know, receiving games kind of looking not too great. You know, Jeff Driskel under center definitely makes things interesting. And then, I mean, Melvin Gordon, if you have Melvin Gordon, you're probably still starting him. He went 19 for 70 today. He might face some stacked boxes these next few weeks as Denver's pretty beat up in, you know, in the passing game. But, yeah, you know, I mean, if you have Gordon, you're starting him. If you have Sutton, you know, if he's healthy, you got to throw him out there. Well, we'll see. Actually, Sutton might be kind of an interesting one moving forward, especially with Driskel under center. But we don't really need to touch too much more on that. On Pittsburgh, though, a big day from Deontay Johnson, 8 for 92 and a touchdown. And then Juju, 7 for 48. But what I find interesting is Deontay was targeted 13 times, Juju 8 times. Is Deontay Johnson like the guy in Pittsburgh? Is he the wide receiver one, or is, you know, this just a, you know, that's just the way it went this week?
I mean, I think he'll go back and forth a little bit, but I don't know. Deontay looks really good. He's making things happen. Even that first week, he made a couple of mistakes, and they just kept going right back to him. So I think it's awfully encouraging here for Deontay. I mean, Juju got the two touchdowns in week one, but other than that, I think he's been the number one for the most part here. So even if it's more of a 1A, 1B, there's plenty to go around here. So I keep moving Deontay up my ranks, and it'll probably happen again next week. I mean, 13 targets, Juju gets 8, and then after that, it's 5 or lower for everyone. So they're really separating from the pack, and this is a passing game you want to get a piece of for sure.
Yeah, I'll say if we're talking real life terms, Deontay is my guy for sure. I'm much more impressed with him watching him play. I think he's the best talent receiver wise on this team right now. If we're talking fantasy, I agree with Eric that it's going to bounce a bit back and forth. I think Deontay is going to kind of tend to do the hard work, and it'll open some things up for Juju, and they'll move Juju around because they know if they get him the right situations, he can eat big time. So yeah, I like both. I agree. This is going to be a great passing game to get a piece of if you haven't yet. I'm sure there's some people thinking Chase Claypool, but I'll say beware of him because he had that 184 yarder. And yeah, he did catch it and he did run it, and that's fair. He earned it. But you take that out and he had two catches for 4 yards, and we'd be like, oh, Chase Claypool, whatever, not even worth mentioning. So I always beware of that really one huge target that kind of gives a big day.
Yeah. All right. So if you have Johnson or Juju, you're definitely throwing them out there. They're, you know, as we said, 1A and 1B moving forward, and the Steelers passing attack is, you know, a good one. James Conner's back on the menu, 16 for 106, had a touchdown. Like I said, I mean, I said this on Wednesday, the Steelers have always wanted to have the one bell cow running back as kind of their style. So, you know, Conner's the one who ate today. If you have Snell, personally for me, I'm going to still hold on to him just because it's such a high value handcuff. But obviously Conner looked great today. In the words of, you know, perhaps a very smart person on Twitter, what would have to happen to make you feel comfortable starting James Conner moving forward? Eric.
I still don't feel comfortable after this week. I mean, I don't know. Is he healthy now? I guess he's fine. I can't figure it out. I mean, he had 59 yards on one run. That was about 2/3 of his day. Only 2 targets, 2 catches. So that was down a little bit. I guess we got to play him, but I wouldn't be surprised to see him out again here in a week or two. I think I'm too burned from last week or last year and then the start to this year last week. So we'll see how long he can stay healthy for. But it's scary every week until you probably get that first touchdown. Then you can breathe a little bit.
Yeah, so let's move from one, you know, injury prone running back to a guy who was supposed to be injury prone coming into the NFL on his draft scouting report. I just saw this the other day. Frank Gore had durability concerns. Well, he made history today. He played in his 228th game, which is the most of any running back in NFL history. And then the 49ers honored that legacy by all of them getting hurt. Raheem Mostert did have that 80-yard touchdown, but, you know, as we said, pretty much every 49er player, you know, got hurt today. And we talked about the injuries and how that affected the 49ers, you know, pretty much moving forward. So I don't think we need to touch too much more on them. The Jets, though, Gore, 21 carries for 63 yards, right? Exactly 3 yards per carry, which I think is like his like contractually obligated number. And then, I mean, Chris Hogan, 6 for 75. Braxton Berrios, 6 for 59 with a touchdown. Is there anyone fantasy relevant on this Jets team besides Jamison Crowder who didn't even play today?
No, it should have been Herndon, but he got 4 targets, 1 catch for 5 yards. So no interest in Hogan. I think Hogan even got hurt too. So now I think we can move along pretty quickly here unless you get points per carry. Then you're liking Frank Gore.
Yeah, Crowder was interesting. Everything else is garbage.
Everything else is garbage. I think that should be like the Jets team. Like, hey, we have Jamison Crowder. Everything else is garbage. Let's move to the afternoon games. Actually, some pretty interesting ones. Kansas City and the LA Chargers going into overtime. You know, a lot closer than I think a lot of people thought this game was going to be coming into it. But let's start with the really exciting thing. You know, like I said before at the beginning of the show, every Chargers fan I know was super excited when they heard Herbert was getting the start today. So, I mean, Eric, were we robbed last week of the rookie versus rookie debut of Herbert versus Burrow? I mean, how did he look today?
Oh, he looked good. I mean, he's hung in the pocket, took some shots and made some nice throws downfield. He didn't look rattled. He was running the ball, look athletic. I ran for a touchdown, 4 carries for 18 yards overall. So, yeah, I mean, I was pretty down on Tyrod Taylor anyway, so I'm all in on them playing Herbert going forward. I mean, their coach came out afterwards and said Taylor's the starter, just other than the injury. I don't think that's true. I hope he doesn't stick to that because they looked a lot more fun. They got the running backs involved a little bit in the passing game, which was nice. Joshua Kelly had 2 catches on 3 targets. Eckler had 4 on 4. So, I like him a lot more with Herbert in there. I think the biggest takeaway is just how good the Chargers defense is, and it's going to give a ton of carries to Eckler and Kelly if they can stay in games like this. I mean, Chargers ran the ball 44 times in this game, so we might have 2 running backs here we can start if this keeps up, just like when we did with Gordon and Eckler last year.
Yeah, with Kelly kind of taking that Melvin Gordon role. 23 carries, 64 yards, only 2.8 yards per carry, but he definitely was, you know, they were definitely willing to give him the work. And, you know, he seems to be the back that's going to kind of take those kinds of carries. Again, you know, Eckler's really not the between the tackles kind of guy. And then Herbert, by the way, you know, started his NFL career with a rushing touchdown, just like Joe Burrow. So Herbert and Burrow, man, this is going to be the new, you know, 1-2 from this draft class. Should be really fun to watch. You talked about the Chargers defense, and they made the Chiefs look mortal today. Patrick Mahomes, 27 for 47, only 302 yards on those 47 attempts. And then Clyde Edwards-Helaire, 10 carries for 38 yards. Mike, I mean, is this more like, did the Chiefs not play well, or is this Chargers defense really that good?
I think it's definitely a mix. I think anytime the Chiefs don't bring their A game, part of it's always going to be on them because they're just so loaded that it's hard to stop everything. It's like, it just seems unfair if you're not a Chiefs fan watching the Chiefs roster play, because you're like, okay, Travis Kelce is the best tight end in the league, and Tyreek Hill is one of the most explosive wide receivers in the league, and Clyde Edwards-Helaire is a rookie running back who completely gets it and knows how to be a weapon. Like, it's just, yeah, there's just, you take care of one guy, then you got another, and there's Sammy Watkins, who is a top pick, and there's Mecole Hardman, who's just about as fast as Hill. It's just, yeah, it seems unfair. I'm going to put more of this into the Chiefs' struggles than purely the Chargers' defense. I think the Chargers defense is good. Maybe they overlooked the Bengals in week one a little bit as they were preparing for the Chiefs, thinking, you know, that's the really big game. And maybe that's why they didn't look quite as impressive defensively to me against Cincinnati. If they put another outing up like this next week, yeah, I think I'm ready to buy in on that Chargers defense and say they're full bore.
So you're not ready to just straight up avoid the Chargers defense, you know, if you've got players facing against them. Eric, what about you? You seem to feel a lot, you know, more highly on the Chargers defense. Are you think we should start avoiding them, or is this more the Chiefs just didn't bring it?
I think if it's a team with a poor offensive line, I would worry about it. I mean, they really shredded through the Bengals last week. I mean, it was really kind of impressive. I mean, even though the Chiefs struggled, Mahomes was sacked once. They had no turnovers. So they did a good job of kind of dealing with the pressure, but they made it tough for them. So I don't know. I think let's see what their upcoming schedule is, but I think they're a tough match. I mean, the Panthers, they may get enough garbage time if they fall behind that's great, but you also get them kind of grinding out the clock, the Chargers on offense. So I think they're going to stifle some of these offenses and just might make life miserable for the quarterbacks. So I don't know if they're a full-blown avoid, you know, like the Patriots and Bears have been in years past, but they've got some players that can wreak havoc for sure. So, yeah, just keep it in mind because they have some talent.
And Butker ended this game with a 58-yard field goal. So, you know, some pretty interesting endings to games today. But what didn't end interestingly was the Baltimore Ravens and the Houston Texans, because Baltimore, another week and pretty much another blowout. Obviously not anywhere near as bad as the 38-6 drubbing they, you know, put on the Cleveland Browns last week. But this game was never really all that close, even though the final score 33-16. I mean, it honestly wasn't even that close. I mean, with the Ravens, though, is this going to be a concern, you know, that they're just going to keep doing this to teams? Because what it leads to is like Gus Edwards getting 10 carries and J.K. Dobbins only getting 2, and Mark Ingram also getting 9 carries. I mean, his day was salvaged by that touchdown, but, you know, Lamar Jackson has 16 carries. And is this Ravens offense potentially stifled by their own greatness? Kind of a weird sentence.
Yeah, I think it's possible. I mean, you kind of got the sense after a certain point they were just kind of getting along to next week. And, you know, I mean, they still were giving Lamar runs, but they kind of kept it simple and just moved along, gave Gus Edwards a lot of carries. I'm really interested to see what the snap breakdown is for the running backs. Ingram really felt like he led the way for the most part until Gus Edwards took over late. Dobbins was kind of taking the third down role, which normally would be encouraging for fantasy football, but that's not a huge role for the Ravens necessarily. Lamar's not a big passer to the running backs, so he kind of disappeared because he was just the third down back. He had a big run towards the end that at least gave you some points, but I'm curious to see the snap count, but it might be a little bit of a mess here. We'll have more weeks where we get more rushing touchdowns, though, and in those weeks these running backs are still going to pay off for the most part, but it's going to be very touchdown dependent, I think.
Yeah, kind of weird with the Ravens. I mean, they scored 33 points, but only 2 offensive touchdowns. Ingram with a touchdown on the ground, and then Lamar Jackson finding Patrick Ricard, of all people, on a passing touchdown. So, you know, just not really a great day for the Ravens for fantasy purposes, and not really a great day for the Houston Texans either. Mike, David Johnson did really well last week and 11 for 34 this week. How concerned are you about David Johnson?
I'm not too concerned about him. I think you see the team, the Texans, running up against a buzzsaw in Baltimore. And I think a lot of teams are going to look foolish when they play the Ravens. I think a lot of people kind of abandoned the Browns after week one and said, oh gosh, they're just a disaster. And we saw that they're not great, but they're not as bad as we thought. They're not like, you know, bottom 3, bottom 4 of the league bad. And I think we're going to see the same thing with the Texans. The Texans have had two pretty tough matchups so far. And David Johnson still dominated the carries outside of Deshaun Watson taking 5. And I'm fully happy to run with him. It's just we're going to see, you know, the occasional bad week from the offense here or there. Yeah, I'm still happy to roll with David Johnson, though.
Yeah, and I actually have the snaps finally here for the Ravens running backs. It was Mark Ingram, 27, Dobbins, 20, and Gus Edwards, 20. So it's kind of like the Lions backfield, only it's a good offense, I guess.
Kind of like the Lions, only a good offense. Yeah, very different things there. Good offense and a bad offense. So
I feel bad about saying that. Stafford's a good player, but maybe just a less frustrating offense.
That's fair. And then Houston, I mean, so Brandon Cooks, big day, 5 for 95. Randall Cobb had another 5 catches again. And then Jordan Akins, 7 for 55. But where was Will Fuller today?
He was stretching out his hamstring for a while. So, yeah, I think we should have seen this coming with all these injuries. It was going to hit Will Fuller eventually. So it's a tough defense. I mean, if he's out there, I'm going to play him. We'll see how severe this injury was. But definitely a disappointing week because he got you nothing. So they started to get the tight ends really involved. Like you said, Randall Cobb finally got 5 passes for 59 yards on 6 targets. That's kind of what I thought was coming with Cobb most weeks. Cooks has a nice week. So they're still figuring things out here, but Fuller is their best receiver. So hopefully he's healthy and can get back out there.
Sorry, I was a little distracted by the ending of this Seahawks-New England Patriots game. I mean, right down to the wire, and, you know, Cam Newton just coming short on the final play of the game. So, I mean, as always with New England and Seattle, very interesting end of the game. Great Sunday Night Football game, and, you know, we'll have more on that in a minute. So, you know, Will Fuller, you still want him out there, but, I mean, it just kind of sucks because there was no injury concerns. I mean, obviously, other than how we're always concerned about Fuller, but there was no notes about him before the game. There's no chatter about him being limited or anything like that. For him to just kind of not really exist on the field was just kind of crappy. So, you know, tough to see that. And let's get into the final afternoon game. The Arizona Cardinals beating the Washington Football Team 30-15. Cardinals moving to 2-0. They're looking very good to start the year. I mean, they were pretty much in control all game and you know, beating a very good 49ers team last week. Mike, what are you seeing from this Arizona offense?
So it all starts obviously with Kyler Murray, and he's been incredibly impressive so far. I always see him, think he's a little on the smaller side. I think I mentioned this earlier, and I worry he's going to get hurt at some point, but he's an incredible athlete. He had a really great touchdown run today. That's something I'll probably say most days. And yeah, it's going to mean good things for the weapons, especially when they face, you know, a bad defense, good offense, where they have to kind of air it out more and more. DeAndre Hopkins is fitting in great. He's clearly the number one. We saw some signs of life from Christian Kirk, which was nice. Couple receptions, one big one, 49
yards. That feels pretty generous. I guess maybe faint signs of life. There's a pulse.
Yeah, and we see Larry Fitzgerald still is eating up a lot of volume, which PPR-wise is always going to make him an easy start because at worst he's going to pull down, you know, 5, 6, 7 receptions and 50, 60, 70 yards, and if you're lucky, get a touchdown. I'm still interested to see how things shake out with Andy Isabella and Christian Kirk. It would be nice if all that work kind of went into one guy, but we'll see who kind of emerges here. Isabella, I think, is worth a speculative ad, but yeah, besides Hopkins and Lit Fitzgerald, I'm still kind of figuring out this receiving core.
And Eric, do you have any thoughts on the Arizona offense or Kenyon Drake, who, you know, 20 for 86 today, looking pretty good? Yeah.
It's been disappointing. He hasn't really flashed any big plays. They've given some passing game work to Chase Edmonds. He had 4 targets. Drake had 2. I was hoping for more from this from Drake. I was drafting him pretty high. I passed up on some, you know, really good running backs for Drake. So I'm hoping this was just a case of 49ers defense, Washington defense, and there'll be better days ahead. But it's been kind of mediocre, but I mean, it is 22 touches, so it should get better. Kirk is a little concerning. I said it last week, but I was hoping for more of a slot type role from him, and he's getting those downfield targets, which are good usually, but I'm not sure that's Kirk's strength getting down. I don't know. He had a 49-yard catch here, but it just tends to amount to more of these 2 for 57 type games. So I was hoping for more volume. It doesn't look like it's going to happen. So I'm going to stay pretty low on Kirk, I think.
Hey, well, 2 for 57 is infinitely better than what he did last week. So yeah. We're moving in the right direction. Those of us who are relying on Christian Kirk, we're getting there. I don't know where we're getting, but we're getting somewhere. Speaking of, I don't know where we're getting, but we're getting somewhere. The Washington rushing game, it kind of looks a little bit of a clearer picture and a better picture because Peyton Barber this time only 1 carry for 1 yard, which is pretty much the same, you know, game he did last week. They just, you know, gave him the ball 16 more times for some reason. But Antonio Gibson, 13 carries, 55 yards and a touchdown. Is he finally taking the role here in Washington, Mike?
Yeah, I think he is. Seeing him take the majority of the carries is a big sign. And obviously there weren't a ton of carries. We only had the 23, and it was still 13 for Gibson, 8 for McKissick. But seeing him become the lead, seeing him run well in that role, it is a great sign to me. I think we all thought of him as the pass catcher, so it would be nice to see a little more pass catching work. He still only had 2 targets this week, 1 reception for -3 yards. But yeah, he's definitely the most exciting talent there. We've seen J.D. McKissick plenty of times before. He's just kind of a retread. And the hope is that we just don't see anything like that Peyton Barber outing last week.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah. If I never have to see Peyton Barber carry the ball again, I'll be very happy.
Yeah, yeah. And the snaps, I mean, snaps show it. Gibson got 43, J.D. McKissick 29, and Peyton Barber 1 snap. So we should throw a party for that. It's heading in the right direction.
We talked about Scary Terry, 7 for 125 and a touchdown. Hopefully we see more of that from him moving forward. Yep. Logan Thomas, only 4 receptions for 26 yards, but he was targeted 9 times. And I believe he had, 8 or 9 targets again last week. So, that's still promising, right, for Logan?
Yeah, just depends on who you have. I mean, like we've said a couple times, there's a lot of depth at tight end, but if you're stuck, 9 targets, certainly encouraging.
Yeah, I'll agree with that. Tight end is looking pretty deep, but that you could do much worse than to get a guy with that many targets. And when you have a quarterback like Dwayne Haskins, who I don't put too much stock in as a great talent, I think it's worthwhile to have one of the few targets he is comfortable with and who it looks like he's just going to keep throwing to over and over again. I could see this kind of shaking out where most of the targets go to Haskins, Thomas, and eventually Gibson if he gets more comfortable in the passing game.
All right, and then let's move on to the final game. I mean, it just ended. Seattle Seahawks beat the Patriots 35-30, and as we said, it ended almost the other way with Cam Newton coming up just short on a final goal line carry. But Russell Wilson throws for 5 touchdowns, 21-28, spread out all 5 touchdowns to a different player. Chris Carson caught one of those. He also was 17 for 72 on the ground. And then on the New England side, the really interesting thing: Cam Newton again leading the team in carries, in rushing yards, in rushing touchdowns. I'm really looking like their number one running back this year, in addition to being, their quarterback. Quick thoughts on the Seahawks-Patriots game, Mike.
So I'll start with the quarterback situation in New England. I definitely was way off on Cam Newton. I was selling on him. I didn't think he was going to look great this year, and man, he has been impressive. As you said, he is the RB1 for that team. They clearly are comfortable just running him over and over and over again. And I think they're just happy to run him until he breaks, which is working out really well. I mean, I think the Seahawks are going to be one of the best teams in the league this year. And when you can run the Seahawks to the final play with a new quarterback and not a lot of established weapons that I necessarily love, that's incredibly impressive. On the Seahawks side, the big thing that stood out to me, I was so impressed by a DK Metcalf touchdown catch. He caught a ball.
Yeah.
Caught a ball over his shoulder. Defender was immediately on him, and he kind of just looked like, "Oh, this is nice. There's a little there's a fly on my leg," and he just kind of walked through it and walked in, and it was just like, "Man, that guy is a beast."
That fly was Stephon Gilmore, by the way, not just any. That was Gilmore covering him. Metcalf ran a beautiful route. Just faster, bigger, stronger than Gilmore, and was able to get that touchdown pass. Honestly, beautiful play. Eric, quick thoughts on this game.
I mean, the Seahawks are easy. They're all startable pretty much. Russell Wilson looks great. Other than Greg Olsen, who let a pass go for a pick 6 and then didn't get targeted after that. But the Patriots are fascinating here. I mean, Cam Newton throws for 397 on 44 attempts. That's a huge sign for me. I thought they were going to just be a ball control offense, and they really opened things up. So that's huge. And then, I mean, Cam is their goal line running back. It's just wild. They're just running him at the goal line. He's going to have a monster year. Edelman gets 11 targets, 179 yards receiving. That's huge. N'Keal Harry gets 12 targets and 72 yards on 8 catches. That's really big. So I think this Patriots offense, they're still going to have some weeks where they play a bad opponent. They're going to play defense and run the ball and maybe only put up 21 points. But this is an offense all of a sudden that looks a lot more exciting than it did a week ago. Maybe other than Sony Michel. But the rest of the team looks really good here.
Yeah, I'll say bouncing back in one more time. I saw a lot of what I saw last year, where you see the offense just gets people open, and it's kind of amazing that New England can scheme so well, where like you've got all these easy throws, and I'm thinking, man, like Cam looks like one of the best quarterbacks like I've ever seen right now. I think it's so much in that coaching there, Bill Belichick. And yeah, I'm saying something crazy to say he's an amazing coach. Surprise.
Yeah.
But I think it's going to be an enormous benefit for Cam. And there's no player I was more wrong on this year than him.
Yeah, you can't undersell 397 yards passing for Newton, because that was the problem in fantasy, is that he just was not a high passing volume passer as far as yardage. So this is pretty major here. If he keeps scoring 2 rushing touchdowns every week, he is probably, what, top 5 quarterback this year easily. So we'll see if this keeps up, if he can stay healthy. But it looks pretty incredible right now.
All right, well, that's it for us here in week 2. Like I said at the top of the show, be sure to check out the What We Saw article when it goes live on Monday morning. They go even more in-depth into each game, so you definitely want to check that out. And we go pretty in-depth in these games because, you know, we like to go long here. And then check back in tomorrow night for the Waiver Wire podcast led by Frank Costanzo and Ryan Heath. For Eric Smith, for Mike Miklius, I'm Miles Nelson. Good night, everybody.